Blog Talk Radio.
Ready for some fun facts about Cleveland? There are none. Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns football program. Oh, wait, you don't have one because Cleveland has the magical ability to turn draft picks into drug addicts. Along with your signing bonus and workout bonus, is there a guaranteed bonus if you don't go to rehab within the first 2 years? I think your player development program isn't working primarily because your city is a dump.
You're listening to That's What She Said with Casey Wallace on MSL Radio. No sugar-coated cupcake sports talk here, guys. We're just going to keep it real, and we're going to have some fun while we're doing it.
There's a Kings game this afternoon, and so, you know, scheduling was a little tricky. Kings lost, obviously. It was not, I listened to it on the radio. I saw part of it on TV. It was not a fun one. You know, at first people were saying that SMU is not replaying the Clemson game. This is another game. But, I mean, you got to remember, North Carolina put 66 points on Duke, who was totally last beat, obviously, with all the Canes last yesterday, with the whole controversial play at the end and all the other calls that were missed, and we don't need to rehash that because people have talked about that enough. So, you know, the Coastal is now out of reach for the Canes. I'm sorry. I didn't have a good game really either, and so even though, they did get two scores, but the game was pretty lopsided for the majority of it. And even, we're hearing the radio broadcast with Joe Sakecki and everything, and it just was depressing. So, anyway, on to better things, because there's NFL's tomorrow, obviously. So we're going to do my Follies Week 10 picks. My first thought on this is that I'm really glad Atlanta has a bye this week, because those frauds play a TV football team and lose, and I'm sick of them screwing up my picks all day. The other teams buying are 49ers, Chargers, and the Colts, and they all needed it, obviously. So last week I ended up with 8-5, mainly because of Falcons and Titans probably too, over the Saints, that crazy game. So anyway, let's get to it. You got the Packers over the Detroit Lions, and Detroit Lions are terrible, obviously. The Packers need a slump buster, and Detroit rolling into town is at the right time. Detroit's on pace for a number one pick. They haven't won in Wisconsin in 24 years. Detroit won in Wisconsin, in Green Bay, actually just in Wisconsin in general, because they played a couple games in Milwaukee. We've had four presidents have served. The Lions have had 13 different quarterbacks. Green Bay has had two. And when the Lions won last one, Aaron Rodgers was 8 years old and Matt Stafford was 3. Just putting it in perspective, plus Detroit's offensive coordinator's name is Jim Bob Cooter. And I mean, just combine that. So, next one up is Panthers over the Titans. Obviously, Titans coming off a big game, overtime win, and Mariota played well, and a real deal quarterback, but y'all, it's Carolina. And they're hot, confident, and pulling off the win, despite losing fourth quarter lead. They bring the pressure on the quarterback, and Mariota does not have a solid running game to escape that. So, next up, Patriots over the Giants. Yes, I know in history, the Giants are the team that haunts the Patriots after stealing two Super Bowls, but these aren't the 2007 or even the 2011 Giants. Those Giant teams could rush faster. This one can't. And, I'm looking forward to this game just for, nostalgic purposes. Maybe the Giants get into the Patriots head, but I doubt it. I mean, come on. Tom Brady is not going to let anybody beat him this year, especially not the worst defense in the league. And even though the Patriots are banged up, it doesn't seem to matter because Bill Belichick can, like, wave his magic wand and turn a tight end into a right tackle with no problem. So that's that one. I still think it's going to be interesting, though. Anyway, on to the next is the Broncos over the Chiefs. The Broncos' defense will handle the problem late in Chiefs with ease, regardless of how many interceptions, standing throws, versus Kansas City's pass rush, and Alex Fresco will stand a chance. So, finally, in this category, we've got the Bengals over Texans on Monday Night Football. And here's the thing. The Miami Dolphins were beating Texans 41-0 at the end of the first half. That's pretty much enough of that for me. Like, I don't care if it's J.J. Watt or that Andy Dalton struggles in prime time. The Texans are not going to end the Bengals on the Phoenix streak. So, next category, we start off with a loss on Thursday Night Football. I had the Jets over the Bills, and they lost, obviously, and that, you know, that was a classic Jets going to chat into that game. And the Bills just have to come back complete, like, with all the Christmas wrapping with those uniforms. More on that a little bit later. You know, it was hyped up, you know, game. It was at home, extra motivation. The Jets should have won. But Jets. Next up, we got Steelers over the Browns. No Ravy on Bill, no Big Ben. Possibly, no problem. It's still Cleveland. And you got Manziel blaming his shortness for why he can't see the field. The Browns have never beat both the Ravens and Steelers in the same season ever. That sounds crazy, but the Browns already beat the miserable Ravens, so history says this upset can't happen. All right, we got Rams over the Bears in St. Louis. This might be shocking. It was shocking to me when I realized it, but Cutler and the Bears haven't been as bad as everybody thought. You know, Cutler seems to be playing like he actually gives a damn. But Chicago still isn't based defense is good. And either when St. Louis at home, Ty Gurley is explosive, and Chicago struggles happen to run. Finally, Raiders over the Vikings. Bet you would have never thought you'd hear this, but, like, Oakland versus Minnesota is probably what's going to be one of the best games that we've done. You know, Derek Carr has been consistently making people believers. And, you know, Bridgewater, I think questionable or probable because of the concussion. But if he is out, then you get both edge defensively, I think, to Oakland. But I don't know. I think it's going to be tight. You know, the Vikings are they're fighters. I mean, they're tied with the Packers, top end, you know, it's in, you know, a little bit biased. Kind of want them to lose before we go in and play next week. But anyway, that was short for another day. Last category, use your discretion. Let's see. Eagles Sam Bradford finally has shown some confidence and competence during that game versus Dallas. And the Eagles did look better. They were actually consistent on the run finally. And, you know, I'm sorry, Miami, but the Eagles have one thing that Dolphins don't, and that's momentum. But I'm rooting for y'all to prove me wrong. Next up, Buccaneers over Cowboys. You probably thought only a crazy person would say this before the season started. Big Dallas in a hole they can't climb out of. It's the longest losing streak since 1989. And I'm sorry, but Tony Romo's not coming to save y'all even when he does come back. Jameis has got the potential to take advantage of this vulnerable defense, and he's been playing really well lately. You know, this game is probably going to be an ugly win for either team, and probably going to play ugly, to be honest. Next up, Ravens over the Jags. This is the Dutch Oven's stinker game of the week. It's 2-6, or 2-6. The Jags keep shooting themselves in the foot with mistakes at critical times, screws up their chances to win games. If you look back at some games to Indianapolis, Tampa Bay, Jets, you know, I honestly just feel bad for Jags in this one because not even that much fun to make fun of them. And the funny thing is, it takes the Ravens to be in the Super Bowl. But can we finally stop talking about Joe Flacco and his elite blah, blah, blah? you know, also take the Ravens and coming out by, and, you know, Coach Harbaugh's all optimistic, optimistic, whatever, so maybe they're buying it.
Next day, give a jank.
We got the New Orleans Saints over the Redskins. That team is very predictable, but we can guarantee some turnovers. New Orleans has, like, the best offense currently, but the second worst defense in total yards. Washington has third worst offense. You know, we'll have to, you know, really try to exploit and take advantage of how many yards the Saints give up. I don't know. I don't see it, but, you know, so sorry, Kirk Cousins, but I like the Saints. Cardinals over the Seahawks. This is going to be an awesome game, I think. If this one is very tough to pick. Sunday Night Football, we're getting a really good game. You know, both strong defensive teams, and, it's, I don't know, I just think it's a great matchup. And it's got, obviously got a lot of implications in the NFC West. Arizona's going to come out and be aggressive on offense out of the gate and establish control early on. Wilson's the most back quarterback in the NFL, so you got to get that hitch to Arizona's conservative defense. But Seattle's defense has apparently had a streak of 8 straight quarters without giving up a touchdown. And obviously, it's a must-win for Seattle, and probably the biggest advantage for them is at home at CenturyLink, and that place is hard to play, and it's a night game, which means those fans are going to be even more riled up than normal. So, back to, let's see. Well, I've been seeing Tony Romo and the Cowboys, probably soon, but, you know, they have the same record as the Titans and the Jay, and, Ravens. And the bank record of 2-6, that no team has ever emerged from that to go to the postseason. They're dead last in the NFC, behind the game are in Washington. There were been one Sunday they would have been a little bit in a much better position. Castle throws many interceptions and touchdowns. And, you know, he's thrown four interceptions and 3 losses. And that's where, you know, we're leaving Eden. And it's led to the Cowboys' worst losing streak of 6 games in 25 years. The last time was 1999, and it was Troy Aikman's rookie season. You know, during this streak, Dallas has given up 54 points in the fourth quarter alone, and it failed to force a takeaway in 6 of its 8 games. So it hasn't been looking good, obviously, for Cowboys fans or Cowboys in general. You know, they got to take on Tampa Bay this week. They keep playing better and better each week. And here's the thing. Even when Tony Romo comes back, the first 2 games back come in a 4-day stretch. You got Miami and then Carolina on Thanksgiving, and Carolina's probably going to be going to that game 10-0. The Cowboys aren't going to have a chance to gain back that ground on Philly or the Giants when Romo comes back because there's no games remaining versus their biggest divisional threat. So it's pretty, you know, it's overdone. Sorry. I know that was a little harsh. One thing quickly on the color rush jerseys that were in the game on Thursday night between the Jets and the Bills. You know, it was a Christmas fest. Apparently discriminated against colorblind people and made the players look like they were running around in unitards and onesies or whatever. Color and color of uniform matchups in the NFL seemed like a nice alternative to, you know, the long-standing rule that one team wears a color and the other wears white, yada, yada, yada. You know, you've been seeing color and color in the, you know, college football, college basketball, and the NBA. So, but the NFL didn't want the teams to wear their standard color jersey. Nope. The NFL had Nike create new color jerseys for the Thursday night game, meaning cha-ching, selling more jerseys, merchandise, money, whatever. And then they paired the jerseys with matching colored pants and socks, and so there was no contrast, and the players looked like they were wearing little bodysuits. On Thursday night, Jets wore solid green, and Bills wore solid red, and it looked like it was supposed to be a Christmas game. And uniforms reminded me of the, like, little wacky How the Grinch Stole Christmas cartoon movie. And to make things worse, fans with red-green colorblindness, which is 1 in 12 men and 1 in 200 women, couldn't tell the teams apart, and some even called it torture. And so the NFL reacted by saying their standard TV test didn't account for colorblindness for fans at home. The problem's probably going to come up again this Thursday because Titans will wear blue and the Jags will wear gold, and apparently some people have blue and yellow colorblindness. I don't know, I saw a pretty picture of the Jags uniform and they're, quote, gold, but, that uniform probably looked like what was in my nephew's baby's diapers. I should babysit him. I mean, it was, the hashtag baby diarrhea. So I wouldn't be looking forward to putting that on if I was one of the players. Okay, Miami Dolphins time. Okay. This is going to be the battle of the inconsistent teams versus the Eagles. The Dolphins are the punching bag of the AFC, they're 0-4, and probably they're not going to make the playoffs in the 7th straight season. I mean, they'd have to go 6-2 to finish with 9 wins to even have a shot. Only 7% of teams have started 3-5 made the playoffs since 1990. Defense is a mess. They gave up almost 230 yards. Game over the past 2 weeks, and then against Buffalo, they allowed 266 rushing yards, two rushers over 100 yards each. I mean, that's unacceptable. Against Tampa, Mitchell has been less than impactful, made less than impactful difference playing next to Sue, even though, Sue's got multiple people on him, and Bill only has one, or, because everybody's just not straight on Sue. So obviously you should be getting some more tackles. So they might want to try to test out Jordan Phillips or CJ Mosley, Saxonville, and we'll switch around somewhere else. Not being effective. As far as the pass game goes for Philadelphia versus Miami's pass defense, obviously, like I said, Bradford has shown glimpses of improvement, but don't know if he's going to be carrying consistently or not. And Jordan Matthews has been dropping a lot of passes. So Miami might have the advantage in this, but remember, Buffalo did shred the Miami secondary, and so the question is, can Philadelphia do that? Bigger problem is, obviously, Philadelphia's 10th-ranked rushing team versus Miami's 31st-ranked rushing defense. Now you got Ryan Mantis and DeMarco Murray, and they've combined with 9 rushing touchdowns, which is like 6 sets in the league or something like that. Murray got off to a slow start, but his last game, he had a season high, so we'll see. And, the Eagles, this is just an interesting stat I saw that, but it's obviously, I'll explain it in a second, but the Eagles have had 210 plays of 20 yards or more since the start of the 2013 season, and Chip Kelly is 6-0 in last 6 games versus the AFC team going back to 2013. You got to take that for what it's worth because obviously this is a totally different team, new quarterback, new running back, etc. Philadelphia's offense is not that difficult to Miami's. Offensive coordinator Bill Lander was a quarterback coach, I think, under Chip Kelly. It's a limited passing game, and then the run game can be lethal. But unlike Miami, Philadelphia's run game is actually featured, and the pass is used sparingly, which is the opposite of what we do. Also, can the Dolphins give their opponent a safety for the 3rd week in a row? I don't know if that's an NFL record or not. But that stuff's kind of stuff, too. On offense, same old story another day. All right, here's the funny thing. Miami ranks 2nd in the NFL in rush yards per carry, 4.9. Lamar Miller himself is 5.3. But they're 2nd to last in the league in rushing attempts per game. Only six, the only team behind them. So, that's the real Detroit Lions. And it seems like a lot of reporters are picking up that Lazor seems to be ignoring Campbell's consistent statements that he wants Miami to be a more physical running team. I mean, just come on, run the damn ball, please. It's the only way you've been successful. I mean, you saw it in the games versus Tennessee and Houston. I mean, you guys put a ton of running yards on them. And the problem is, like I said all the time, you can't just abandon it once you feel pressure or resistance. Please just run the damn ball. Miller's great, and Jody had, a solid first showing. He's showing a lot of potential. He came in after missing the first, 8 weeks or 8 games. So, yeah, please just send them all. The other thing, you know, I said this to you before, have Canada roll out more, because that's when you best plays come in that situation. You know, the receivers have more time to get open. Tannehill throws accurately on the run, or he could find a way, like, to run for a first down, probably. This is obvious to most people, but in order to be successful in the red, or you need to be successful in the red zone, obviously Miami struggles. And, you know, you may see a lot of yardage for Miami, but you'll see a lot of touchdowns. Biggest thing, I think, is that they need to play with that kind of nothing-to-lose mentality like they did versus the Titans and Texans. Dolphins are buckling under, you know, they buckle under pressure, they can't get behind. As soon as they're playing from behind and everything falls apart, you know, see the Patriots still game, you know, it's crazy. You know, I see Dan Campbell is very optimistic about the playoffs and, you know, being able to go into them. He said something like he's been on teams where, like, they won. You make a run, you won 7 straight or 6 straight, and you're counted out, you're the hottest team going to playoffs. That's not really technically accurate because he's been around, like, a 3-5 type team like Miami, making those runs in the playoffs. And anyway, he said, quote, everybody's a little beat up, everybody's a little tired, everybody's a little testy, especially when you lose a game. But no matter where you're at, teams will rest, will rise, and teams will fall. There will be some games that will end up being, or some teams that will end up being the high teams by the end of the year, and some who are sitting pretty nice right now, and they only win another one or two games. It happens every year. Okay. I mean, you know, they have Rashad Jones in for the 8-game season right now. That's all that matters. So, I mean, you know, we've got to stay positive, I guess, but... And, I mean, there is some advantages because, you know, Miami played the first 8 games, only 2 of them were at home, so they're going to have a fair amount of games at home in that stretch. And if you take out the Patriots, you know, the record of their points at home is 13-21. The Giants are the only team with a winning record, which is, you know, kind of laughable. So, and on the road, their only opponent with a winning record is Jets, and Daniels and Torino at the middle, right? So, middle. Main thing is Dolphins really need to die at home. They have to play the right way, I guess. So, let's talk the Miami Heat. Gerald Green incident. Okay. Obviously, he was suspended Tuesday by the Heat for 2 games for conduct detrimental to the team. Riley called it a personal matter. It was a mysterious incident in his residence of him in the hospital for 4 days. There was a report released Wednesday said that Green punched a man. He was very loud and verbally combative with paramedics and eventually had to be handcuffed by the police to fire transport him. The weird thing is, like, it started around, like, 10 in the morning, the incident. You know, he got the front desk to call Miami Fire and Rescue and because he had blood on his hands. And there never really was explained in the report why he had blood on his hands. And he walked out of the building, collapsed on the valet ramp, after getting back up and returned to the lobby with the help of a guy who was trying to keep him in the area or stop him from going back up to the apartment, you know, keep him from going back to his apartment. That's when Green punched the man trying to help him in the eye. And, you know, Green's absence from the team started November 3rd, which is the day before the incident, when he quit the game because of illness. He was treated by a member of the Heat during the day, that day for dehydration. I don't know what part that plays in any of this. I mean, it's all very hush-hush and serious. You don't really know. It's all speculative. And the Heat are totally bum on it, obviously. Green obviously has no history of violence or the run-ins with the law. So, again, today, you know, he was back at practice for the first time. You know, he's got his incident I'm ashamed of. I can't apologize enough to, you know, the residents of the condo, fans, his family, the organization that has back. Situation I'm not proud of. I just can't be, you know, thankful enough that I'm with this organization that supported me and all that, you know, stuff like that. Next, Miami Heat. So, I'm actually, okay, here, I should probably finish that topic for everyone. Another thing is, it's weird. I don't know what happened. I know you hear speculation about the block and all that because of how he was reacting. I mean, I don't know if he's coming down from it, like, at 10:40 tomorrow. I don't know how, you know, really that drug works. But, and again, that's a speculative statement. So, kept everybody mum on it, and nothing's leaked. So, I don't know. I mean, as long as he's healthy, and the team is supportive of him, and that's what matters. Okay. Now, on to the sad Miami Heat note. Mario Chalmers is gone. I'm so sad. Like, literally, I was really sad when I saw the news the other day. Like, all of a sudden, I was just like, oh, I mean, I heard the rumors, but then coming into the season, Chalmers said that, you know, Riley and Harrison told him, you know, that they had his back, or, you know, like, you know, he was wanted there and all this stuff. And so, then it seems okay, but then the rumors start swirling back up again, and now Mario Chalmers and Ennis are off the bat, or are in Memphis, and we got two guys I never heard of, or I think we know who they are, Dino, Beno Udra, and Darnell Stokes, I don't even know. We know Tyler Johnson has outmatched Rio's production, but it's still, I don't know, it's tough, because obviously he's been there for a while. I mean, who's anybody going to yell at anymore? You know? I mean, let's see, yell at. I mean, you've seen the videos that people have made since, you know, he got traded. It's like of clips of him being yelled at, which is obviously, it's funny. Because people get, like, LeBron would get so mad, and Bosh got so mad. It's real. He has personality, and like, I like that. I thought he was a nice guy. Regarding, you know, people are talking about luxury tax and all that. And, you know, I think that's a secondary or, like, third good reason. Like, I think the main thing is Tyler Johnson took the job. He's performing much better. And, you know, he wants to flourish. Riley, regarding, like, Justin Johnson and Josh Richardson. We decided to give these young guys some room to grow and gain confidence. Sometimes you have to make those kind of decisions. And I mean, that is true. You know, Wade said Mario was my guy, man. It's always hard being people's teammates, especially someone you've been with for a long time, someone you won championships with. We all know it's the business of the game, but it sucks. Whiteside, of course, gave you a Whiteside response that, quote, it's different. And, you know, said, you know, that he'll always be a brother, you know, we're going to always talk. Giannis had a big, long Instagram post with Chalmers, saying he's always got a sack, like, meaning, second, anybody yells at Chalmers and Memphis, Giannis is going to come kick your ass, probably. Just a couple of stats about Chalmers. He was drafted 34th overall in 2008, 32 spots behind Michael Beasley. Here's where he ranks among that year's 60 draft choices. He's 19th in scoring. He's got ahead of him. Fifth assist. And that's coming behind Westbrook, Braddock, Rose, and DJ Augustin. 15th in 3-point percentage, 11th in minutes per game, 14th in win shares, but most importantly to all of us, first in championships by two of them. He definitely was one of the better value draft picks of the Riley era. And along with that, Miami Heat is the best defense in the NBA. Oh, real. Real, I'm going to miss you again. Okay. Miami, I'm just trying to get a couple things in before the show is over. Miami has the best defense in the NBA. First in defense rating, and it's first, Warriors, and Jazz. They're only allowing 93.5 points for 100 possessions. And that, you guys, would be better than any Heat team in the history of the franchise. It's better than those teams, it's better than Jeff's teams, it's better than LeBron's teams. They're especially great behind the arc and near the rim, you know, Whitehead and Bosh, being much more athletic. They're rebounding better. Bosh is rebounding better than Kevin Love, and Whiteside's better than Andre Drummond, their second defensive rebounding. Sure. Bosh is second defensive rebounding in the league, and Whiteside's third. Justice Winslow, as a rookie, has been great defending three-pointers. when he's defending players, players are only shooting 20% when they're shooting behind the arc. So there's that. Last thing is there's Ronda Rousey is on tonight, and she's fighting Holly Holm. And basically, how quick is she going to win this bet? You know, she's had 12 career MMA fights, 11 victories in the first round, 8 victories in under 1 minute, 9 victories by armbar, 3 victories by knockout. Holm is totally, like, complete opposite, like, of a fighter than Rousey, but it's, a lot of people are saying that's a good matchup for her. So, be interested to see what happens, and enjoy the rest of your weekend, and you've been listening to That's What She Said with Casey Wallach on MSL Radio. Sorry for any clunkiness. I'll talk to you all next week. You're going down for it.